Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye Live with The Fedge.
If it was up to me, I'd dump the Israelis tomorrow.
Heck, did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. Absolutely. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. All right, everybody, from Amman, Jordan, and streaming globally across the World Wide Web, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is October the 11th, 2014, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening out there in the United States and Canada, and a good afternoon to evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web, may all be well with you and yours. Now, quite an eventful week for us here at Inside the Eye Live. This past Tuesday, I appeared on Red Ice Radio with Henrik Palmgren, and the entire interview actually ended up being about 2.5 hours. And you can hear hour number one, which is like an hour and 18 minutes, by going to Inside the Eye Live. And on the left-hand sidebar, you will see a thumbnail of the article, and you can reach the link to the page and the audio file there. So again, make your way over to Inside the Eye Live. Click on the left, just not click, but look on the left-hand sidebar, everybody, and you'll see an article about being on Red Ice Radio, and it says here, The Fetch to, no, that's not it. It says The Fetch on Red Ice Radio. There you go, 10-6-14. So check that out. It's a nice, people are giving me some good feedback on that interview, so it should be a lot of fun. Let's see here. I'm actually trying to get into the chat room. It says this web page is not available. I'm not sure why that is. I hope I am now live. That would not be a good thing. My internet connection looks like it's working just fine. But for whatever reason there, I'm not able to get into the chat room. Let me try a different computer here. Maybe that will work. I've got like so many windows open, everybody, trying to prepare for today's show. And boy, do we have a pretty good show lined up for you today. Before I get into that, also want to say that I was on Ground Control with Major Tom and Keith AZ. That show airs on Revolution Radio at 12 o'clock at night Eastern time, Friday morning. That's 12 a.m. Eastern Friday morning, Thursday night, Friday morning. And I was on for 2 hours there. It was hosted, of course, by Major Tom and Keith AZ. We spoke a lot about current politics. And then in hour number two, Stephen Kelly actually came in as a co-host, and he asked quite a lot of intriguing type of questions that yours truly answered, and it's actually a pretty entertaining show. So you might want to make your way again over to Inside the Eye Live and check out the article about being on Ground Control Radio. That also you will find in the left-hand sidebar, so go check that out. Again, everybody, I'm trying to make my way over to Inside the Eye Live myself. I had a few technical issues here. We are trying to get in now. My Skype appears to be okay, but for whatever reason, I'm not able to get onto Inside the Eye Live. Not sure why that is. Maybe just the server's down. That might be. I don't know. But we're trying. We are trying. Inside. It would go figure, you know, just as the show's starting and everybody wants to show up to see the show, the servers are down. That would be something that I would expect sometimes, I guess, huh? Just the way it works sometimes. So, so much for that. I can't get in. I'd like to join you guys. I do see that my Skype is up and running. So again, I'm assuming you guys can hear me okay out there, but for whatever reason inside the iLive, just happens to be down. Again, let me try one more time. Inside the iLive.com. It's just spinning and spinning and spinning. That's never a good sign, everybody. So I don't know if it's just a localized issue here. I feel like I'm kind of blind because I like to see the chat room and work with you guys, in the chat room. So, what we could do is work our way over to freedomslips.com. For now, you could go to freedomslips.com and, join us over there, while we try to work on Inside the Eye Live. And not that I can do it. I gotta run the show, if you guys know what I mean. Anyways, we have a great show lined up, this week. And, what we have here is in hour number two, Robert Ransdell. He is the write-in candidate for the U.S. Senate in Kentucky. And he is going to be joining us to discuss his bid for the U.S. Senate. Now, if you don't know who Robert Ransdell is, he is head of the White Guard, and his campaign slogan, "With Jews We Lose," has gained Robert some notoriety with the ADL in the United States, the Times of Israel and Haaretz and other publications in Israel, as well as the New York City Daily News and a host of other local newspapers and television stations, who have actually been carrying his slogan forward, but of course in typical dismissive hit pieces. But he's going to be joining us at the 11 o'clock hour. And then in hour number two, I'm sure many of you are going to be interested in hearing, Zizzoro. He is again hour number three at 12 o'clock p.m. Zizzoro is from Zizzoro.blogspot.com. He is very popular here on Inside the Eye Live. He's an independent blogger, essayist, and East European political analyst. And again, he's going to be joining us to bring some of the latest developments in Ukraine, Russia, and the Eastern European bloc. So go grab yourself a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, a cold brew or a glass of wine or whatever is the best beverage for the time of day where you are at, and sit back and relax and enjoy 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. Now, the weather here in Amman, it's been very unsettled weather the last couple days, starting on Thursday night, Friday, all day yesterday. Today has been kind of nice, although beginning Thursday, we had some storm cells come through, mainly thunderstorms, more in the thunderstorm. Last night, about 12 midnight, we had a pretty good cell come over the house. Now, it's nothing by U.S./American standards. That's pretty nasty stuff sometimes. But for here, it was a pretty good downpour. It only lasted about 20, 25 minutes. We had a pretty good lightning display. It was actually kind of enjoyable to watch because I was able to just sit out my window. I went out on the porch here and just kind of watched the lightning and the rain come down. And of course I've got all the cats and they didn't know what to do with that. It's their first exposure to rain, at least the kittens that is. So it was a very nice, refreshing night. Today we've had hazy skies, a little bit of clouds, but largely hazy skies, with temperature around 78 degrees and winds are very brisk. And gusty 16 miles per hour. And again, it's gusting and variable wind direction, sometimes from the west, sometimes from the south to the southeast. So my window here, it's looking towards the south, and sometimes the wind is just coming straight through the window, and it is very refreshing. Right now, the wind, I can tell, is coming through my western-facing window, and it is very, very fresh. It is, again, my favorite time of year. If you haven't been over to Inside the Eye Live, and I know it's kind of difficult to get there right now. Okay, it is back up. I'm actually there now. It's gone through a pretty big updating. It's been cleaned up a lot. It's been updated. And you guys seem to be really, really appreciating it quite a bit, because the links, the download links relative to the, you know, there's a page here. I should go back. There's a page here at Inside the Eye Live. If you're not familiar with the website, it's called Past Guests. And if you click on the Past Guests, it has all the available interviews of our guest over the last 3 years or so. And boy, the past week, of course, with the Red Ice Creations audience coming on over, it has been just hit big time. A lot of people have been interested in the guest page. So check that out. Again, there's quite a lot there. Equally, there's a couple new articles. One of those got picked up by Reddit, which was somebody at Reddit, which was really cool. That created a lot of traffic at the site. And so, just, it was a busy week here. What can I say? A very, very busy week here at Inside the Eye Live. So join us. I'm actually there now in the chat room. You know, I got my cables here. At the break, I'm going to have to like untangle them. I got cables everywhere right now. That's kind of messy. But let me say hello to everybody in the chat room. So yeah, I'm there, guys. Hello. I said hello, Cass. I see you. Cleet. Snippets and Cranula. So guys, welcome again. Good to see you guys. I kind of feel blind here trying to do the show without the chat room reminding me what's kind of going on. So again, there's a chat room parallel running over at freedomslips.com. So wherever you're comfortable, again, that's where we'd like you to really take part of your interactive entertainment. Looking at our famous globe here, I see, wow, quite a bit. Honolulu, Hawaii has checked in. Edmonton, Alberta is here. Wentzville, Missouri. Ypsilanti, Michigan. And Ottawa, Ontario. So these are just some of the cities that are currently registered here on the globe. We'd love to see your city pop up, of course, on the globe. And we look forward to you joining us over here at Inside the Eye Live. I'm trying to see if there's anybody else here. Anybody else? Lafarge, Wisconsin has checked in. So props out to you guys. Great to see you. And again, check out some of the pages there. Lots of good stuff. Lots of new stuff over at Inside the Eye Live. One of the couple articles we've been putting up deals with Russia's fifth column. Now, what I've been doing a lot lately is I've been posting information on various forums just to practice, you know, just to practice my writing, typing, and talking, and persuasive skills, as they say. So I've been doing a lot through Discus. I have a Discus account, and I've been posting a lot over at this really Jewish-centric foreign media publication inside of Moscow, inside of Russia, called the Moscow Times. It's basically a neocon mouthpiece. And of course, when you have neocon mouthpiece, what you should expect is you're going to have a lot of politically correct and inept, intellectually bankrupt trolls. It's just going to be part of the environment. And, of course, you're going to get a lot of your posts censored if you dare go beyond this really critical. Actually, it's you know, cultural Marxism. Boy, it's like a bunch of children getting together, telling adults what they can and can't say, but they have, like, really heavy power to force impose themselves on the adult world. And that's kind of what a political Marxist world reminds me of. I saw Facebook, you know, a lot of you guys are friends of mine on Facebook. I don't post so much to Facebook, but I definitely read the feeds. Because there's a lot of great feeds that come in through the Facebook channel. So I'm able to get a lot of great articles and stories, from you guys that contribute. And of course, you can find me on, and all my other social media, contacts again at Inside the Eye Live on the upper right-hand header bar, header on the website. You've got Twitter, Facebook, Google+, LinkedIn, RSS feed, and email. All of these you're free to reach me. Again, I keep an open book. I am not trying to hide. I remember the old days, guys. I don't know if you remember any of you out there who used to deal with the internet in, let's say, 2002, 2003, 2005. One of the main Jewish talking points back then was if you dared to criticize Israel at all, and I'm sure some of you will remember this who go back to those period. If you dared to criticize Israel at all, you would, of course, be just harassed and harangued for being, quote unquote, an anti-Semite. Or do you wake up in the morning and do a single arm salute? You know, you would get all this obnoxious, childish Jewish crap thrown at you. And of course, what they would do is say, well, you wouldn't be talking like that, like you're supposed to be intimidated by a bunch of people on the internet, right? So it's like, you wouldn't be doing that if you weren't anonymous. You're just an anonymous coward. And like, you know, the whole time I've been online, I've been myself. I've never hid behind a false moniker or anything like that. Heck, we got a call already coming in. I'm going to take that call. It's open phones here. Hi. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Good morning.
Good morning, Fetch.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. Hey. How are you?
I'm fine. This is Robson calling from Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Hey, welcome, man. I saw you pop up on the globe. Now I get to talk to you.
Hey, I just have to be brief because I got an engagement I got to run off to. Just wanted to reach out to you. Say you got a great show. I've listened to every episode of all your shows.
Wow.
And I think you're doing just a great job. At some point, I'm going to call you back, and I'm going to give you a little, my take on the whole 9/11 police state, you know, thing that we got going on in this country. Be glad you're overseas, because today is football Saturday, and we get to be inundated with the flyovers and all that old crap.
You know? Oh, that's kind of fun, though. I love flyovers.
Right.
I'm an aerospace guy. Hey, I still love what we've been able to do with our technology. It's still kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, all of the baseball games and all of the football games and everything, yeah, we're just inundated with the, the patriotism thing, you know.
Yeah, it's great stuff. The people just can't keep it in perspective. That's the problem.
Right, right. But at some point, I'm gonna reach out to you. I got to share my story as to how I've been following that 9/11 thing from day one. I'm a military historian,
okay.
Somewhat, you know.
Okay.
And prior service, military. I have a military science minor in college here. So I just think you're doing an excellent job with it, and. I got to run because I got to go to a tailgate football thing, you know.
I'll be honest, I wish I could do that. That would be a blast.
Oh, it's...
I wish I could join you. You know, I got to finish my business here and get back to the States and do a whirlwind Inside the Eye Live from college football tailgates. Would that be kind of cool or what?
Oh, it's cool. It's cool. We eat and drink and... look, and we don't even go into the football game. We just stay out in the parking lot and eat and drink.
Yes,
and talk.
I can imagine. Enjoy, man. Go out and enjoy. Have a great day. Get out there with the folks.
Yep. So, look, I'll listen to every show. You're doing a great job. I'm gonna call you back, and we're going to talk that 9/11 thing, you know, because those same criminals that did that are still out here, and they need to be dealt with. So.
That 100% we are in agreement on. All right. Thanks for your call. Talk to you next week or whenever you get the chance to reach out.
Will do. Mm-hmm.
All right. Enjoy the day. Okay, that is Ypsilanti calling in. That's pretty cool. Love to see that, of course. Again, the phone line's here, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. We would love to have you call in again. It's just fun to have you guys reach into the show and contribute in whatever way you can. Generally, we really appreciate it. And so call in. You know, there's a big comment out there. You know, we're talking about the trolling environment on the net, you know, and I've been posting a lot over at the Moscow Times. And the Moscow Times is one of these foreign-owned fifth column operations. And I go into an article that details mind war. I put up a little bit of mind war. You know, how mind war and the control of media assets is going to be used in order to shape opinion, in order to weaken the population so that it can be taken over. It's a form of internal subterfuge, hence a fifth column. And the Moscow Times is just one of these. And so it is filled, I mean, to the brim, with these brain dead knuckleheads that really believe that political correctness includes the right of Jews to operate in a political sphere without any attention being drawn to them. See, they jump to the conclusion. This is something that really annoys me, because, you know, when I look at Lois Lerner, and I've been saying this about the politicians and the apparatchiks in Washington for a long time. You guys gotta shame these people. And that means confront them in public. They are citizens just like you. And there was a video I saw on my Facebook page about Lois Lerner. And if you don't recall who Lois Lerner was, in America, I know it's an international show, guys, because I know some of you from Canada or from England, just bear with us here. The same policy applies to your governments and your people, okay? So just kind of use the story as a template here. But Lois Lerner, she is a Jewish person, of course, and she was in control of the Cincinnati tax division of the IRS, and she oversaw who could and could not become a nonprofit organization. And of course, Jews in America, and of course, I don't know about Europe, but I know in America, largely they control America through the use of nonprofits, meaning nonprofit organizations or nonprofit corporations. So the way it works in America is you set up a nonprofit or a political action committee or something to that degree. You have very wealthy donors who can, let's say, donate 100,000, 2 million, 1 million, whatever the case may be. They get to write that off of their taxes, which means that the target people, meaning that, let's say the ADL. The ADL, I don't know what you want to call that, but to me, this is a fifth column operation. It's out there, seeking to impose some type of tyranny on the American people. It's the inverse of what it claims to be. It raises millions and tens and maybe even, I don't even know, but maybe it's even the hundreds of millions of dollars a year, basically to perpetuate this Jewish totalitarian mindset that these guys have. Well, Lois Lerner, being Jewish, she's in charge of this. She gets to decide who can and cannot get their nonprofits. And what she's doing is she's targeting anybody that could be opposed to the current Jewish administration in Washington. And well, somebody recently confronted her on the street and basically said, "Hey, Lois, can you tell us about the missing emails?" Because as all of us know, guys, all of us from the IT person here to just the general user of the internet, it is not possible at all for the government to lose all those emails. This means that there is a massive cover-up. Lois Lerner should be in prison. Why is she not in prison? I maintain, and I may not be correct, but I maintain it's because she's Jewish. Because she's a beacon of light, she's above the law, she can do what she wants, and that's all there is to it. And if you don't like it, that's just tough crap. That's not your call, because you are not Jewish. You don't have a right to even think about prosecuting a Jewish person. That is how it works in their thinking. So again, you guys need to get out there and confront when you have the opportunity. Again, it's a big game at the end of the day. It really is a big game. You know, I do my part. I put out the motivation, the information, every Saturday. It's kind of like I don't know. I don't want to say it's like going to church, guys, but you know, every Sunday you can kind of get that good information, get that pep talk. Hey, get out there and do it type of thing. I'm not a rah-rah type of coach. You know, I'm able to perform without that, but guys, there comes a point where it takes the efforts of everybody. And boy, if you can take a look at this citizen journalist confronting Lois Lerner, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Absolutely exactly what I was talking about. Now, they're discussing it here at InsideTheEyeLive.com and giving kind of a play-by-play, and it's true. You know, Lois Lerner, this woman was so ashamed, okay? She was so ashamed and embarrassed to be confronted because she has no face, guys. Once you drew out Lois Lerner into the light, this woman has absolutely no face whatsoever. So she's actually running and hiding to a neighbor's house. And the neighbor is saying, hey, I don't want any part of this. Who's this woman? Get this woman away from me. I think she knows who she is, but get this woman away from me. It was actually, it's priceless. And this is exactly what I mean when I say get out there and confront these people, shame them to the point to where people are going to realize if they go too far and they are exposed, they are going to be ostracized from our community. In the case of Lois Lerner, she should not just be ostracized. She should be in prison. So many people, of course, within the Jewish community should be in prison, but because they're Jewish, they're able to get above and beyond the law. Everybody, stay tuned. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live. Good morning from Amman, Jordan. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live. Intelligent media for the politically aware. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Good morning, everybody out there in the United States, Canada, South American time zones. Good afternoon, everybody in Europe. Mainly, I know big listeners out there in the UK lately. I don't know what's happening with you guys over there in the UK, but somebody's taking to the show out there. And, of course, Australia equally. So, guys, good evening there. Maybe it's even almost tomorrow over there in Australia. So, again, thanks again for tuning in. Welcome. Good morning. From Amman, it's actually good afternoon, but good morning to you again. Here in Amman, time's about 5:32, 5:31, 5:32. I keep setting my clocks and Microsoft keeps screwing them up. But, anyways, 5:31, 5:32. What's my phone say? My phone says 5:31. Okay, 5:31. And so, here the sun's already starting to set now. It's on its final descent if this were an aircraft. And you can actually see very long shadows. Some of the buildings across the hill are already completely in shadow. About the only thing left in sunlight is, let's say, the upper half to third of the hill across the way. So it's starting to already get late. We're going to be going down to about 64 degrees tonight. It's going to be somewhat chilly with the breeze, but this is, again, my favorite time of year. I'm looking forward to that. Now, I've got the house to myself at the moment. I had guests a bit earlier, but when the show comes, the girls like to kind of leave because they know they can't talk, they can't laugh, they can't giggle, lest they make noise and interrupt the show. So they've left, and all that's left is me and the cats. Now, the cats today, this is your cat report for October 10th. You know, I saw some emails and stuff and some comments out there, and they're saying, gee, you know, if I were donating to Fetch's show, I'd be kind of upset if all he talked about was sports and cats. But I'm like saying, you know what? People love my cat report. Like, you got to do the cat report. I got to do the cat report. Even if you don't like it, maybe you still like it. But nonetheless, you know, the cat report for October 10, 2014. Today, the wife, she allowed the cats to actually come in the house, some of the kittens. So they had like three of them. So they were able to just trounce around and have a good time inside the house and play and not make too much of a mess. They had a good time. They're crawling all over my shoulders and my head. And last night, though, was kind of cool with the rain because they're generally out and about, you know, in the dark hours. You know, cats, they like to go out there and sleek around the nighttime. Well, the rain came, and I went out just to actually check on the cats. I'd already gone to bed. And I went out, and no cats. There's like three cats there, and I got 13, right? Or 12. And there were no cats. So I'm like, where are my cats? And within 5 minutes, they come running. They come flying over the wall. You know, we got a wall because it's like a enclosed porch here. They came flying over the wall, kind of like they weren't soaking wet, but they were pretty darn wet. And the really cool thing is that, of course, they had to get the water off of them. And they're all so clean today. It is kind of amazing. So it was nice. The cats are clean, and especially the white ones, you know, the ones that have the white fur. That's beautiful when their fur is just really clean. Chat room's buzzing, guys. Great to see you there inside the iLive.com. Click on the live chat button, and that, again, will get you inside the chat and join us there. Again, inside the iLive.com. Hour number two again, 11 o'clock Eastern. We have Robert Ransdell is due to call in. He did confirm that. And, you know, by the way, you're not supposed to be putting bacon, talking about bacon in my chat room anymore. I'm going to start banning people if you put bacon in there, guys, because this is like distracting me. And I was thinking, you know, we need to get a sponsor for this show. And what better than getting a bacon manufacturer? We need to get, guys, I need your help. I need a bacon manufacturer, some type of bacon wholesaler with unique bacon products to sponsor this show. Then, boy, we can talk bacon, and the sponsor ought to love it. Because, boy, I know I love my bacon, and it's an anti-Israeli slash Jewish show, and they hate my bacon just like they hate me anyways, so it all goes good together. Anyways, bacon. I gotta go get some bacon. I don't have any bacon right now. I gotta go get some bacon. Anyways, inside the iLive, join. Yeah, BLT sandwiches are fantastic. I love BLT sandwiches. All right, where were we? Again, Robert Ransdell. I got sidetracked because of the bacon. Robert Ransdell, I've clicked off the chat room, guys. Robert Ransdell, again, he is a Senate write-in candidate for the Senate, for the U.S. Senate in the state of Kentucky. He's got the campaign slogan, with Jews, you lose, or Jews, we lose. And I'm going to bring him on just to hear what he has to say. That should be rather interesting. Hour number three, we're going to be heavy into the some of the machinations going on inside of Eastern Europe, Ukraine, Poland, Germany, and Russia with Zizoro from Zizoro.blogspot.com. So it should be really, really quite an interesting final 2 hours. So join us there. There was some really big news. I don't want to sound like I'm... There's some really big news. Anyways, there was some really big news out there coming out of the United Kingdom this week, and that was in the eastern seaside town called Clacton, C-L-A-C-T-O-N. And this is really, they're calling this a by-election. It's because basically when somebody is in power there and they change party affiliations, you gotta call them like a new election, which they're calling a by-election. And the former Tory member of parliament, his name is Douglas Carswell, what he did is he changed affiliations to the UKIP, United Kingdom Independence Party. And what happened was he had a resounding victory, 59.75% of the vote, and that was far ahead of the ruling Tories, which had 24.64% of the vote. Now, the former Tory MP Carswell, he defected again to the UKIP party, and this is the UKIP's first national parliament seat victory, and it is representing a very huge red flag, which is now being waved in the face of essentially an Israeli slash Jewish controlled majority, Liberal Democrats and Labor parties over there in the United Kingdom. Now, Carswell secured 21,113 votes in the Essex seaside town, while Giles Watling, his Tory opponent, won 8,709. In third place was Labor, which had 3,959 votes, and the Liberal Democrats trailed last with a mere 483 votes. Now, the former Tory MP defected again from Cameron's party, which is the ruling party, in August. And that again triggered this by-election. Carswell is a staunch Eurosceptic. and he redirected his allegiance to UKIP because he felt that essentially Cameron could not help reform the EU. Would have been better if he just said Cameron was a stooge. 4 years ago, UKIP actually did not even bother to contest the city of Clacton. Now, there's widespread disillusionment in this particular town with Britain's three main political parties compounded, and all of this is being compounded, I should say, by very high levels of unemployment. And this is said to be benefiting the UKIP. A report published by Britain's Center for Social Justice in 2013 revealed that an overwhelming 54% of people of working age in one particular district of Clacton were jobless and dependent on state benefits. Again, can you imagine that? You got plenty of money to give away to Israel and other areas of the world. You've got plenty of money to essentially sanction Russia and kill any amount of chance to go do business around the world. But 54% of the working adults in one particular district of one particular city in the UK are actually unemployed and surviving on government handouts. In another election, which was held this past Thursday, in two towns, in Haywood and Middleton, these are in northwest England, UKIP secured almost 39% of the vote, and that is following a recount. Labour's candidate Liz McGuinness managed to retain her seat by just 617 votes. So UKIP has been making some fairly strong gains in the United Kingdom. Of course, UKIP has been made a bit famous for its iconic political character there, Nigel Farage, and the party remains staunchly in the Eurosceptic bloc and, again, continues to make gains throughout England. In another by-election, I covered that, a largely hidden, but sometimes your segues S-U-K, sometimes. Gotta be careful here. Normally what I do, guys, you know, I actually put a script together. If you watch me put together a show here, everything here at Inside the Eye Live is generally self-produced. Well, that means that I'm managing the switchboard. I'm managing the telephones. I'm managing the research. I'm managing the content. Everything is on yours truly's shoulders here. And it's okay. I don't mind that, quite frankly. A lot of it I would want on my shoulders anyways. In fact, everything I'm speaking about I want on my shoulders. Nonetheless, sometimes, you know, when you prepare these shows, you just don't do a great job. You don't put the proper notes in the proper place. You know, when I was practicing, I didn't practice. I actually paid back when I was a kid, 22, 23 years old. I actually paid to go learn how to do radio. Believe it or not, I was in Los Angeles. I actually paid. And go into the studio and learn what to do, how to read, all that kind of fun stuff. I actually paid to learn. I taught myself. It's kind of like going to school, but I did it through a commercial venue rather than in a university. And anyways, you're supposed to, like, between the various segues, you're supposed to, like, put, like, a check or a mark, something that lets you know when you're going from one story to the next. Well, I forgot to do that. So now, segue to this one. There is, guys, this is a little bit more serious now. There is a very hidden, and it's very real, a tectonic shift that is occurring within the economic foundations of the global economy. Now, these tectonic shifts are taking place largely because Jewish domination of both the financial world and the United States government, and this is creating what is now a perfect storm through which Jews can wage wars on nation states through, again, Jewish dominance and control of the global banking system. In other words, the independent control of money and its issuance and flow across international borders means that money, which is really representative of a person or nation state's accumulated labor and capital, is essentially under the total domination and control of Jewish interests. Think about that. And Jews are not shy of using this control to impose or enforce their agenda on nation states and, of course, individuals that reside and exist within these nation states. All of this domination and control works fine relative to the global economy, fine is a relative term here, guys. It works fine when the target country or the individuals within these target countries are at, within smaller aligned countries such as Iran. The economies aren't so big to where it's going to make a big deal. But note that the methods used to impose on Iran, and this is a solution wholly dictated by Israel and Jews in Western nations, meaning Jews within the diaspora, within the Western nations, the whole idea of what's happening to Iran now is coming largely from Jewish political organizations. And that goes all the way into, of course, Washington, the EU, and further yet into the federal banking system or the Federal Reserve. Believe me, Jews are not shy when it comes to using anything that they control, they can control and do control to harm the interests of others when they are targeting that other group. Money, again, is representative of our collective labor and capital, meaning that when we work and we provide value and we can collect money, or we can use our money to invest and have money come back in even more, that is our collective efforts. That belongs to us. That's our efforts. It doesn't belong to some punk guy in a yarmulke sitting in New York. It doesn't belong to some punk guy sitting in some office somewhere that says, hey, I think I'm going to steal Fetch's or somebody else's labor. I'm going to steal it, because that's all sanctions are. When you sanction people and you eliminate the ability of people to actually employ their labor or employ their capital, you're basically declaring war and you are saying, I control you. To use the term of the troll, they're saying, I own you. That's exactly what is happening here on a very basic level, but it's done on a diplomatic, global sense when the Jewish people come to you in Washington and say, we need to establish sanctions against Russia. Guys, sanctions is like saying, we own you. Because they control the flow of money, they're saying they own you. Now, if you're Russia, or you're China, or you're any other country for that matter, what are you going to do when some punk in a yarmulke comes up to you and says, hey, we own you. You can't do anything because we control your money. But that's not their money. That is your collected value off of your labor and your capital. That belongs to you. This, at this layer of human expression, this should be hands off everywhere. If that money is gained lawfully and legally, it should be hands off. Nobody should have the right to go and take somebody else's money because that is their labor and their capital. Theft under any other condition, folks, is still theft. And when you have a case now where European economies are now just simply stealing everything that is not nailed down within these ideas or concepts called sanctions, well, you're declaring war on Russia. And this is clearly understood by everybody who gets it. Russia understands that they have been, that war has been declared upon them. And the people who are using sanctions, guys, they also understand that this is a mechanism of war. They just view it as being more palatable than actually bringing out their missiles, their guns, and their tanks and actually using a hot shooting war where people are dying on both sides. However, as we have learned through places like Iraq, sanctions do kill. 500,000 children died in Iraq under Jewish sanctions in America. 500,000. At the time, Secretary of State Albright had the actual ghoulish nerve to tell the world that in her eyes, 500,000 dead Iraqi children under BS lies and false pretenses was quote unquote worth it. In other words, you're still killing people. Sanctions are still warfare. Now, one of the targets of this very bizarre yet real idea within Jewish culture is this idea of unipolar governing. In other words, the world is supposed to fall under this Noahida system and all the goy. Again, I don't make this garbage up, guys. You know, if you think it's a little uncomfortable, go talk to the rabbi who perpetuates this garbage. But, you know, they actually believe. And, again, they impose it into the political systems, the court systems, the military systems, the financial systems, that somehow there's the Noahide law. There are the Noahides, which are the people like the Ted Cruz's, the John Kerry's, all these rectified idiots. What you guys out there call the white sellouts, okay? That's what you call them, white sellouts. Well, in this same concept, they're the Noahides. They're the ones that have been converted to essentially serve Jews entirely and do their bidding. In other words, all of this religious dogma of the elite of Jewish esoteric systems is nothing more than a cover for a political agenda of global control or dominance, which is what some people then call the New World Order. So these people, they believe in their seven Noahide laws. They believe that they're supposed to rule the world. But Russia to this date has stood firm in their way. They gave Washington and these Jewish elites what they wanted relative to Libya. And as far as the Russians are concerned, the wording was abused. And of course, we saw what the U.S. and Europe did to the country of Libya. They just blew it back about 200 years. It just destroyed its social fabric and structure. Well, they're trying to do the same. Well, they've done that essentially to Damascus and Syria, but the Russians have held firm and the country still stands against this very dark order, which of course is manifesting within probably, if we're going to be politically correct here, the higher levels of Jewish esoteric thinking. Well, there's been these, of course, these recent events surrounding the Ukraine, and they're just a part of this larger strategy, this larger undeclared but declared Jewish strategy of war against Russia and its people. Now, you had Secretary of State Nuland. She's in charge of Eastern European affairs. She is a very heavy a neocon is psycho, but she's very heavily influenced by Jewish neocon thinking, which means she's irrational. She's not stable. She basically used violent force through her agents to take down an elected government in Ukraine. This was clearly seen as an act of war against Russia because it put their warm fleet in the Crimean Peninsula at risk. Russia then, it's a little shady, but it's still legal. There was a referendum in Crimea, and Russia, the people of Crimea voted to retain their allegiance with Russia, and Russia said, okay, welcome, we'd love to have you back, here's your passport. Well, that has ticked off to no end these ultra-intelligent elites that run U.S. foreign policy. And so what they've done is they have stepped up this sanctions regime. Well, one of the elements of the global flow and transfer of money is known as SWIFT. And this is this global banking system that allows for wire transfers. And it's used again by countries to exchange their own currencies for U.S. dollars in order to purchase. Well, originally what it was intended to do was to allow countries to exchange their own currencies for U.S. dollars so that they can go out and purchase oil and other dollar denominated commodities that show up on the global market. Again, it was created in 1973. This was the exact same year that America forged the petrodollar agreement with Saudi Arabia to force all oil transactions to be denominated in dollars. And this financial system has really assured the U.S., which then is, of course, your Jewish bankers and your Jewish elites, control over the global reserve currency. And this has been going on now for about 400 years. Now, although SWIFT is considered to be a European-based conduit, again, for global financial transactions between the various currencies, nearly everyone in the industry knows that SWIFT is a U.S.-dominated system tied to America's control over the reserve currency. And as the U.S. continues to attack Russia and her allies with financial war, including sanctions, that are seeking to restrict these countries' access to the SWIFT system. The Global Center here, just this past week on October 6th, the SWIFT people came out, and they're saying, hey, they now see the writing on the wall, what's going on here. And they are saying that they are not to blame for America's use of SWIFT to wage economic warfare against another country. Russia and China is already now in talks to create an alternative SWIFT system. It appears that the writing again is on the wall for this European-based institution, and they do not wish to go down without a fight. So they are now in a public relations campaign. SWIFT and its stakeholders have received calls to disconnect institutions and entire countries from its network. And, of course, the most recent was Israel and Russia. Now, in my opinion, if you're going to get rid of Iran, you need to get rid of Israel. Israel should absolutely be banned from the SWIFT. It does not have a border. It does not have a constitution. It is technically not really a state by any legal form or definition. Again, states, nation states, have two unique properties. One, they have clear defined borders, and two, they have a constitution under which their people are going to live by. Israel has neither of those. They have no declared borders. They have no defined borders, and Israel has actually never had a constitution. You know, when Israel was actually formed, one of the tasks was it had to set up a constitution. It never has. Everybody, it's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live. We're looking for Robert Ransdell to call in. Hope he does. Right. All right, everybody. Welcome back. This is the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Joining me now from somewhere, I assume, in Kentucky, Robert Ransdell. He is the write-in candidate again for the U.S. Senate in Kentucky. He's gotten some quite a notoriety for his campaign slogan, "With Jews We Lose." And with such a slogan as that, I just felt I had to bring him on. Again, he's been talked about in Haaretz in Israel and Israel Times, New York Daily News, and quite a few local television news stations. Robert, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Welcome. Now, just real quick, for those who aren't familiar with who and what you are, give them a quick update. Who is Robert Ransdell, and talk about your organization?
Well, I've been a white nationalist activist now for about 10 years, and I've been active as a member of the National Alliance up until about October 2012, had been from 2005 up until that point. And I've been active here mostly in the northern Kentucky, Cincinnati area, and basically, doing something that the system basically forbids through this kind of, you know, what I put out there is kind of this psychological warfare against the white people, the white population of this country, that they insist that we don't have ethnic interests, but that everyone else does. And for 10 years since becoming aware of kind of the forces that are behind this kind of anti-white establishment in this country, I've been kind of defying this idea that we don't have ethnic interest, and I think standing up more than anything against the people who that I believe the facts show that are the ones that are behind this whole anti-white establishment, and that would be the Jews that control our media, the Jews that control our banking, and as well as our government. Have corrupted so many of our establishments in the country, whether it be the schools, churches, and otherwise as well. I guess a little bit more notoriety for this Senate run, but I've been active for a number of years.
Sure. Now, what's the demographics of Kentucky relative to the ethnic makeup?
I mean, majority white, depending on where you are in the state. Louisville, I believe, would be the most, as the system would say, ethnically diverse, or, the biggest concentration of non-whites, I believe, would be in the Louisville and Lexington area, which would be the most, you know, the urban centers, I guess you could say. But it's a majority white, majority rural outside of that.
Okay, I'm looking at the census 2013 estimated 88.5% of your state is white. That's a very strong majority. About 8.2% are black or African Americans. And then the balance is just a mix. You got some Hispanics and a few others. So it's a good place for you to be actually running because you have a high number of whites in your state. So far, how distributed are you? I mean, how, obviously you're write-in. Are you an independent? What are you running under?
Well, I'm a write-in candidate. I mean, I would see where your thinking would go there as far as the state being majority white and being kind of, you know, a receptive audience because of that. You know, and there has been, I've gotten a lot of support. A lot of my support has actually been from people out of the state. I mean, just emails and calls and communications by postal mail. But, you know, I think that, you know, more than, I think it's a little, I think as far as, and being in this 10 years, I think I can say this, you know, without any doubt, that the places in this country that are kind of hit with this diversity, that have whites living in areas where there are, you know, large numbers of non-whites, if not majority non-whites, I think those are the whites that are actually, you know, a lot of times more receptive to our message, because they are actually having to deal with the reality of diversity, the reality of multiculturalism, you know, the kind of adverse negative conditions that creates for white people. So, you know, when you live in a state like, you know, a lot of people ask, you know, how did Iowa, a majority white state, vote for, you know, Obama twice, I guess. And, you know, the answer to that, I think, is that, you know, that these whites are only exposed to blacks through TV, that, you know, they know them as doctors and lawyers through these, you know, television dramas and whatever, and not having to live amongst blacks and deal with them every day and deal with the kind of their behavior, typical behavior, is something that leads to them, you know, having a kind of this false idea and not really having any kind of urgency to really stand and do anything. But, you know, as far as the campaign, I am a write-in candidate. Okay. I have, through, you know, some of the actions that I've, you know, we had some media coverage that was over a two-day period. I had started to put out my campaign signs on a Monday. This was, I think, the third week of September. And less than 48 hours to them being out, there was news coverage that hit. I was actually in Lexington at the time, where the next day I spoke at the University of Kentucky at their Constitution Week, some events that an event that took place during their Constitution Week. I basically was on the news as a response to that, basically just making a speech that just stressed the need for whites to have, you know, that whites have ethnic interests. We need to start, representing ourselves, standing up for ourselves in the same way as, you know, blacks and Jews and Hispanics do, other races. Made this speech. There was actually a high school class that I guess was in attendance, and I was actually invited by a professor there at the University of Kentucky. But I did actually travel down to the southwestern part of the state, very southwestern tip, town called Fancy Farm, where they have a political picnic every year, and especially relevant and a popular destination for people in years where they have, you know, U.S. Senate races, big political races. I'm going to be heading down to Louisville this weekend. I'm running this candidacy, definitely certainly more than just a typical write-in candidacy as far as looking for more exposure. I've been, running a, as legitimate of a campaign as I can, given, you know, my limited resources as a write-in candidate. Despite this, the radio programs in which I was attempting to air through using the reasonable access law, which is granted to all candidates for federal office, supposedly, they've, come down with this, idea, that I think flaunts the federal law that I'm not a bona fide candidate, and they've illegally pulled my radio shows. But that was going to be a big aspect of my campaign there. But I'm still soldiering on, and
I hear
intend to
some legal. Yes, you may take legal action, or there's some people trying to help you get some legal action to remedy this against, I believe, Clear Channel.
Well, you know, they pulled my shows officially pulled them 2 days before they were supposed to begin airing. I had paid for 7 one-hour radio programs that were going to be airing at 10 p.m. on Sunday night on an affiliate here for Clear Channel, 550 KRC, which, you know, during the week has Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck during the day. Pretty, you know, good listening audience there, even if it would have been on Sunday in the evening. They have used this terminology that I needed to show that I was made a substantial showing to be a bona fide candidate, which is basically they can stretch this as far as they need to or as little as they need to try to accomplish their ends. You're supposed to have access as a candidate. There really is, you know, this law was created to give people like me, candidates like myself, exposure to the public. These people that, you know, I guess the most frustrating thing about this isn't even, you know, I know what how the Jews act. I know they do this kind of thing. It's just the population, for some reason, still maintains this idea that the Jews don't have any control over anything. Well, I can guarantee you that it's not, you know, the Inuit Indians that are, you know, getting together and seeing to it that these programs are pulled. As far as action that I've taken, I had a gentleman that has been running programs here for years as a congressional candidate in Ohio, actually in the same station, who is not ideologically completely in line with me, but he has spoken on topics such as, you know, the Zionist control of our media. He has run ads in the past with back in 2002, that highlighted the fact that we had Michael Chertoff, a dual citizen of Israel, as our Homeland Security chief, and he had his programs and ads pulled for a short time, but he got them back on through writing a letter. He helped me with a letter to write to Clear Channel, the FCC, as well as the station there. I also did have a lawyer contact them and send them a letter, but, you know, you only get as much justice in this country as you have enough money to pay for. One of the remedies under the reasonable access law is I can actually file for their license. I can actually file with the FCC for their operating license and acquire their license if they don't adhere to these reasonable access standards that are set in place by federal law. So we're going to explore our possibilities after the fact. What I don't want to do is just completely stop the campaign and just kind of just try to get these people to budge off their stance because, you know, I want to be able to overcome what they're trying to do, which is silence my campaign.
Okay. Social media. How active are you with social media? What strategies do you have to employ social media in your campaign?
Well, originally when I started the campaign, I didn't have a campaign website. I felt, you know, with the limited resources, I didn't want to sink, you know, thousands of dollars into creating a website. I did have a fellow white nationalist, racialist, helped me establish a website for, you know, a lot less than it would have been through just approaching someone independently. I am active on a couple of discussion forums, white nationalist discussion forums. One's called stormfront.org, the other one's called vnnforum.com. These two sites are very popular among white nationalists. There's been a lot of discussion about my campaign. I have an official campaign thread, and I've been maintaining there since about May when I registered for my candidacy was registered in May. There's been a lot of interest, a lot of people starting, you know, their own discussions on there about my campaign. My email address is Ransdell, that's RANSDELL 4 FOR US Senate 2014@yahoo.com. I did have some YouTube videos, 4 campaign videos that were up on YouTube, and they, without warning, the fellow who uploaded the videos for me had his entire page terminated. Had the entire page terminated, again showing you that the people who we are told have no control and no power over anything completely, you know, flexed their muscles and took the entire page down. We are looking to get those back up. We also have those videos still available on a site called TrueTube, which is run by people who are ideologically with, you know, the white nationalist movement. And I also have a contact number that wouldn't be online presence. I actually had a Facebook page that was created by someone after the initial media coverage hit that I guess was just someone who really liked the campaign, but it was removed after 3 or 4 days. I'm not somebody
We know Facebook. I say we know Facebook's Jewish operated, so I'm sure that had something to do with it.
Yeah, I'm not on Facebook or Twitter precisely because of that.
How about Twitter? I'm not a big Twitter guy, but how about Twitter? Are you using Twitter?
I'm not on that, no.
So your social media is kind of limited to websites and a couple forums, is what you're telling us.
Well, you know, just places that are friendly. You know, I'm not going to go upon the enemy's media and their platform where you have many people that, you know, are these, I'm just not one that really, you know, uses those outlets anyway. That's one thing I believe as far as the white nationalist movement is that we need to, you know, you have the internet as a tool, but that too many of us, and not just white nationalists, but many politically minded people that are, you know, are fighting for, you know, traditional values or, you know, standing up against this radical leftist element, very often we kind of just find our home on the internet and we just kind of get lazy and stay on there. I just believe that we need, you know, if we're gonna advocate and agitate for change, we have to be, you know, out and you know, kind of grabbing the average person out on the street, because most of the stuff that they use the internet for, they're not finding it. They're getting on the internet to, you know, engage in just this kind of, you know, they're on there looking for stupid videos on YouTube. They're not looking for us. We need to grab them. But many of these people are receptive. They're still receptive to our message. It's just they're not using the internet to really seriously, you know, engage, find out about, you know, some of the things that are going on in the world. Maybe I'm not common for my age. I'm 34. Most people are kind of engaged in this kind of stuff, but I'm not one of these.
I agree with.
Maybe it's a disadvantage.
No, you have the right strategy there, Ron. You need to get out there and meet the people, meet and greet. There's nothing to replace human contact out there. I was just curious as far as just more for the advertising effect than anything else. You've obviously been getting a lot of play. I heard about you. I'm in Amman, Jordan, so I heard about you through a news thing that was showing up in an Israeli newspaper. So obviously.
Yeah.
Publicity is a good thing, you know, at the end of the day.
Oh, yes, sir.
Take us through a speech. What's it like, you know? Because you're running a very controversial campaign at this stage. Maybe in 10 years you won't be controversial. But for now, let's call you controversial. You have a slogan. With Jews, we lose or you lose?
With Jews, we lose. With Jews, we lose.
With Jews, we lose. Brilliant. It hits straight to the point. Take us to a speech. Now, you go out and you book, or somebody's booked you to go do a speech. How much protest from the cultural Marxist knuckleheads do you get throughout, let's say, any given speech?
Well, you know, I gave the UK talk 30 minutes before I was cut off, you know, and unfortunately in this country. I think that in this country, more than, you know, certainly where you're at, certainly where, you know, even in Europe, you know, there's just a lot more open discussion, at least about, you know, just this flawed relationship that America and the West has with Israel, and just this one-sided supposed ally relationship. I mean, it's just, you know, people in this country, I say all the time, are not prompted to think about, you know, why exactly are we allies, we being the United States, with Israel? What positives do we get that outweigh the tremendous negatives? I mean, and the number one negative being that this is the reason our support of Israel militarily, financially, and diplomatically is the reason that, you know, we have this Muslim terror threat. And, you know, most Americans just don't have any conception of this, and they're told, they're basically just told Israel's our ally, and they're never prompted to think about it. As far as speeches go, I can't say that I've made a number of them to open audiences. In this country, there's just such an adverse reaction, a negative reaction, in the mainstream, you could say, to anyone speaking about Jewish power and Jewish control. Now, this doesn't mean that there aren't many people that are receptive and know what's going on, and even the people that will negatively, you know, react to you, many of them know what's going on. I say all the time in this country that the American politicians know enough not to step on the feet of the pro-Israel people, step on the feet of the Jew power brokers in this country, and they know well enough because they know that these people have control and power. Now, I have been invited during the course of this campaign to a number of events. One of them was this UK event. Some of these events I've been invited to, I don't even believe that the organizers really have known who I am. I mean, in this country, you know, you go onto a list. I'm on a list in the Secretary of State's office, registered with them as a candidate, and I think many of these organizations that have sent me invitations and letters have just had me up there as, you know, they basically just take, you know, they haven't realized that, hey, there's a pro-white candidate running that's calling attention to Jewish power, but they've invited me. I was actually set this Thursday to appear at a forum, a candidates forum, in Lexington, at a college near Lexington, and they actually had to cancel the part of the forum that dealt with the seat that I'm running for, U.S. Senate, because they couldn't get the two primary candidates, Mitch McConnell and Allison Grimes, to commit to it. So they canceled that. But still, I was invited to that and was going to go. You know, so, you know, I may have been able to obviously speak there on some of these topics.
So it sounds to me what you're saying, Ron, is that the mainstream candidates are essentially neutralizing you by not giving you a seat at the table if you're showing.
Well,
I
would say in this case it wasn't, more than likely in this case it wasn't trying to limit me, sir. It was them basically just not, except for maybe a couple of exceptions, not engaging the public. I mean, these candidates, they come out, they run these ads, they make these appearances where they give speeches among, you know, their base, their electorate base, you know, maybe have like 100 people show up for a rally, but they never actually engage in debate where, you know, they're actually going back and forth between each other, and they are, you know, encountering criticism, and they're encountering real opposition. There is going to be a debate this upcoming Monday that's going to be aired on a statewide television organization called KET, Kentucky Educational Television, which might be simulcast on C-SPAN, which is a national government station here in the U.S. Now, they are attempting, and it was found out through this lawsuit that another candidate is filing in his effort to try to be included in this debate, that the people who put together the criteria that is established for this debate, the criteria for candidates to be included, actually targeted me. The people who were putting this debate together targeted me, and as collateral damage included the libertarian candidate in this race, a man by the name of David Patterson, who's actually the other candidate on the ballot. I'm a write-in. But if Mr. Patterson is successful in his lawsuit, which this is right now being, I think an order might actually come down today, this will establish that they violated his First Amendment rights and due process rights, and that my First Amendment rights and due process rights would have also been violated, and that I'm trying in everything in my power to be included in this debate, of which, yes, the system is attempting to exclude me. But as far as with this case in Lexington with this forum, I think it was just the fact that they didn't bother wanting to engage the public and meet the public at this forum. Especially when it comes to Mitch McConnell, who is a, you know, pro-Israel puppet, if there ever was one, taking, you know, millions from pro-Israel political action committees over the years. These people are just above the people. They're above, you know, just so far removed from the average citizen, and they really don't want to be bothered with it as far as, you know, being exposed to the people, being, you know, having, being engaged in debates and you know, really it's on a personal level presenting their ideas.
It's below them. This is not something they want to. Everybody, our guest today, Robert Ransdell, he's running for U.S. Senate in the state of Kentucky as a write-in candidate. Robert, we're going to be coming up on a break pretty quick. After that break, I'll do a short station promo for that, and then we'll get right back at it. You know, very few people know this, but Jews always complain to us about how they've been kicked out of all these countries without telling us why. I think in your history books, didn't Grant kick Jews out of Kentucky, Tennessee, Kentucky?
Yes, there was an order. Actually, there was somebody who wrote an article, a short article on an internet page talking about my campaign, and they brought up the fact that Grant, because of the negative effects that came from these Jewish merchants and whatnot that were following the armies and taking advantage of the sad state that many of these southern people were dealing with as the Northern Army marched through toward the end of the war. You had these Jewish merchants that were coming in and basically acting on their own behalf or adversely affecting the population there. He actually ordered them out. Lincoln basically nixed the order. But this is something that I think is very important for us to recognize. The Jews are always complaining about anti-Semitism and saying that we need to address anti-Semitism when, in fact, anti-Semitism is a result of Jewish behavior, and that we should not be tasked with having to adjust ourselves. It's the Jews that need to address their own behavior and actions and how they affect the population, how their behavior...
Great. Hope God to be bucky. Robert Ransdell, right in... for U.S. Senate for the state of Kentucky. Okay, everybody, welcome back. It's Fetch inside the iLive, intelligent media for the politically aware right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. just like to remind everybody that this is indeed listener-sponsored and supported radio. It does rely upon your donations to help keep interviews like this coming to you live with an exceedingly high quality, and you guys know it's got generally good quality out there. So guys, do what you can. Work your way over to the promote page. Lots of ways you can assist. You can direct donate to the station. You can buy some of the products that can help you prepare for any type of downfall in the economy or social structures out there. So again, we appreciate all the support you can, and just do what you can. Again, we appreciate your support of this show and the network. Everybody, our guest today now in the second bottom of the hour here, hour number two, Robert Ransdell. He's the write-in candidate for Senate. That's right, the U.S. Senate out of Kentucky. We left the last segment, Ron, speaking about General Ulysses S. Grant basically banning Jews from Kentucky. A little bit of history very few people know about. Moving forward with this campaign, do you have a campaign manager?
I am, like I said, I have somebody who is who has put together a website for me. I have assistance when it comes to some of the videos I've done. But I actually had offers for that after the initial news hit. But I'm somebody that I kind of like to... I'm going to be held accountable, the white nationalist community, you could say, is a little harsh, I guess, sometimes on people who stand up in the nature I am as far as, doing things that, some may consider negatively portraying the effort and movement. So I'm kind of, to a certain extent, kind of a detail freak. I like having, control of everything. I wouldn't want someone making a decision that's going to be something that's I'm going to have to, explain later on. So as much of a task it has been for me to keep up with everything, I've basically kind of taken that that role and been responding and tried to respond basically to every single email that's been in a positive nature. You know, but, you know, the thing is, running this write-in campaign, I mean, having to take resources in mind as far as, I work a regular job. I'm not like one of these politicians that just career politicians. So, you know, I only have, you know, so many resources to be able to expend. I mean, a few of the people that I had two different people that actually offered to serve in that capacity. And I don't believe it was going to be asking for any money, but, you know, I like to have, I wanted to basically have control over this, and I put a lot of planning into this. This is something I've been looking forward to for, about a year and a half. So, I kind of had in place everything that, I was planning, looking to execute during this, and, I've pretty much managed it on my own.
Okay, where's the district that you're strongest?
I'm sorry?
Where is the district that you believe you're actually strongest? Obviously, Kentucky's a big state. It's tough to reach the whole state.
I would say I really don't know if there's an actual district where I'm the strongest. I mean, I'm not sure how many votes I'm actually going to be able to get. I mean, when I had these radio programs that were supposed to be scheduled, I was going to be able to talk to people for an hour, be able to more accurately portray my campaign outside of what they're going to hear from the media, which is that I'm just an evil "quote unquote Nazi," that I'm, just the most reprehensible candidate running in this year's election cycle. My exposure, while it has been, to some extent aided by the media coverage. I mean, there are people aware of the campaign. I had a 50-year-old woman in Louisville contact me, and she said that the she had heard about it, she was going to vote for me, that she had went to an event where there were some Mitch McConnell people at a booth there for his campaign, and she went up and said, "Well, I'm voting for Robert Ramsdell," and they said, "Well, he's the extremist," or whatever, and she said, "Well, I don't care," So, I don't know how many people that are going to be like her that kind of see through this attempt to smear my campaign as, hateful and racist and, anti-Semitic and all this, and so many of our people are kind of susceptible to this brainwashing by the media that anyone that talks about Jewish control and power is just worse than that they really rank us worse than child molesters in this country. They they try to explain away child molestation as, oh, they were born with it or whatever. I mean, it's just
exactly
this good point. This negative connotation. So, as far as the amount of votes I'm expecting, especially being a write-in candidate, I'm not going to be on the ballot. The system in this country is just so manipulated by these Jewish interests. They're so manipulated by this anti-white establishment that it's extremely hard through their system to actually win or have a showing as far as votes. But the main point of this campaign was, and I think it successfully has been successful, I'm going to continue to try to get the message out and use this as a platform to get this message off of just this internet platform. We have to start engaging people and showing that not only are white nationalist interests going to be advocated more and more in the public, and we're here to represent a white majority in this country that is not represented, and people will say, well, there's a lot of white representatives that are in our government, but none of them actually openly stand for the interests of white people the way that blacks do, the way that Jews do, the way that Hispanics do openly represent their interests in our government. We don't have white politicians that do anything other than sell out the white population here. So, we'll see how many votes I get. I'm basically going to wait till election night to see where I'm at there. But I mean, I've a lot, as I said before, a lot of the support I've gotten here so far has not even been from in the state. I mean, there's people from outside the state that are contacting me by, hundreds into the thousands that are not going to be able to vote for me, but they still support what I'm doing and enjoy, hearing from someone who's telling all the truth.
Now, your campaign slogan, "With Jews We Lose," from a marketing point of view, we like it. It's very concise. It's to the point. Do you have any goals to get impressions, 1,000 posters out there, 5,000 posters? What's your goals relative to that?
Well, I've got over 200 of these With Jews We Lose Robert Ramsdale for U.S. Senate campaign signs that are going to be going out. Now, you know, supposedly they are illegal to remove. This is another reason I ran, was that I could run these, you know, have these campaign signs, which are kind of a challenge to actually get made. You know, many sign companies would not do my signs. Especially it is illegal to remove them because in Kentucky it's a misdemeanor crime to remove campaign signs for public candidates for office. But, you know, you have to actually try to get the establishment law enforcement to do their job, and I've had my signs removed. I'm going to be sending out mailings in the mail to voters in the state as well.
Isn't it expensive? Mail campaign?
That's going to be, you know, a few hundred dollars to do it on a low base. I mean, again, I'm not going to be able to do it on a, you know, 10,000 people. You know, the signs, I was able to get done about 200 of them for a little less than $500.
Okay, here's, you know, an idea. How about you put on there some, like, what do you call this, donate and support, you know? For a $500 donation to the campaign, we'll buy.
Well, you know, since the beginning of this campaign, I mean, and I've gotten some donations along the way, I really have been stressing and encouraging people to, more than anything else, spread the campaign, spread the word of it. I haven't really been asking for money, I think that, especially, you know, I paid $2,100 for these radio ads and had this money returned to me. So, you know, as much as I appreciate it and will utilize it, you know, I mean, there's $2,100 I was planning on spending that I've got back in my lap, and I really didn't even want it. I wanted the radio time. You know, and I had paid three different sign companies where I finally found one to do the signs. So it's very difficult even to spend money. This is the amount of control these Jews have over our country, is that, one of the sign companies that I contacted said, you know, they were fearful they'd lose their business if they found out, if the Jews found out that this company has made my signs, which obviously I'm not going to be telling people where my signs were made, but these people are so fearful. So, as far as promoting this campaign, very much of it is just me getting out there and having the guts, whether it be showing up at the University of Kentucky, whether it be showing up some of these places I've been invited, and simply saying, you know, it is time to stop being afraid of being called these names. It's time to stand up for the truth, stand up for all of it. And, you know, as far as money goes, people in this country, they're going to need all the money that they, you know, I mean, they're going to need it. I mean, the way that they're just, especially the white population is just taxed with, you know, $5 billion a year being sent to Israel, having to pay to support all these minority groups in this country with all these kind of handouts and hand-ups that we're forced to give through our tax dollars being sent, you know, for this public housing and you know, basically paying the room and board of these blacks who then attack our people in the streets just on an epidemic-like basis.
Hey, Robert, did you see the video coming out of St. Louis with the blacks chanting like monkeys out there at the stadium and the white people shouting back? Did you see that protest?
Well, there, you know, I saw the St. Louis Cardinal fans that were rallying in support of this police officer who's been targeted, and there is, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I believe it's important for people like me who have ideas that are not, as taboo or not as openly receptive, that the people in this country, white people, are more receptive now, and they're seeing that you know, these blacks are just more and more not expecting any kind of accountability for the behavior, no matter how savage and uncivil it is. You know, these riots, all a result of, you know, a black guy being shot because he was, you know, just robbed a store and, you know, engaged in a tussle with a police officer. These blacks have been coddled. They've been accommodated for so long in this country, and they've been allowed to, basically do whatever they want, that they, you know, really just feel no need to be held accountable for their own behavior. And there are whites that are just getting absolutely fed up with this political correctness. They're being fed up with this anti-white establishment where, you know, we have a situation in this country where the media, controlled by Jews, who incited those riots in Missouri through their coverage, they see it as a more of a an issue that needs to be addressed when a black person is supposedly discriminated against, when they are looked at weird by a white person, when they are have their feelings hurt by being called a word. And the media in this country, the Jew-controlled media, says through their coverage that that is more of a problem than white people who are being murdered, assaulted, raped in the streets by these blacks, and they attempt to censor out these crimes that are happening on just an ongoing basis, and yet they believe that there's more severity in these trivial matters where blacks are offended, you know, not even in you know, and in the rare instance when whites actually, you know, attack blacks on the basis of their race, which many times are manufactured in events that you know, where the media plays it up beyond what actually happened in the case. So yeah, I mean, that's what you brought up there is exactly why I'm running, because I believe that white nationalism, pro-white sentiment, is something that is only going to grow, because whites are going to have to stand up for their ethnic interests. I mean, they are going to continue to be under attack, and they're going to have to realize that talking about hypocrisy and double standards is not going to change this establishment. It's going to be our people
question
standing
for
up.
You. Ron, you're a very bright guy. We can hear that. Just ponder this thought a second here. The term white nationalist is a term that we don't really control. Those of us in the movement, it's really controlled the archetype, the actual aura around this word is controlled by Jewish interests. They've kind of defined it as an extremist type of concept. How about moving it to a subtle difference? Have you thought of using like ethnic interests or something to change it off of a term that, quite honestly, I think we've lost control of it relative to our language. Jews are defining it for us. Have you given that any thought as you've?
Well, I don't think that we've lost control of it. I think we're in an ongoing, you know, and quite honestly, I don't care what the enemy calls us. You know, we need to be worried about how we go out and approach our own people and stop worrying about the media and how they're going to address us. Many people have an adverse, negative view of the media as it is. We need to stop being so obsessed and trying to make these people love us. You know, we need to engage our people and worry about what our people think about us rather than the enemy media. But, you know, I think that there has been, over time, the distinction that has been made through us insisting that we are not white supremacists, that we are separatists. We believe in the nationalist state for whites and that we can't reign supreme over non-whites if we want to be separate from them. So I think that terminology has been more accurately portrayed. I believe white nationalism has not really even been, they try to still call us Nazis, they still try to call us all these negative connotations, white supremacist haters, but you know, I don't believe that they actually, you know, use the term white nationalism a lot. I think that we continue to insist that we are you know, an ethnic, advocacy group, that we are advocating for our interests as a group like other groups are. I think that our population is going to be more receptive to that. But, you know, again, I mean, we're going to be smeared by the enemy no matter what. I mean, we can't expect them ever, no matter how we portray ourselves, if we're ever going to stand up in any kind of even, subtle manner for our people, we're going to be called these names. We just need to stop worrying about it. We need to stop. We have to. The white population, while they still are susceptible to media brainwashing on a number of different levels, they still have a very negative view of the media. The media have been revealed as liars. They've been revealed as having a double standard. And I'm not concerned about what the hell they think about me. I really am not. And what they call us, you know, we need to be concerned about grabbing our people and overcoming that and knowing that our people, while they are brainwashed and easily befuddled, and they have been shown that, I think we have to know that if with enough work and enough struggle and enough dedication that we can reach them, and they aren't
more, they aren't ignorant more than they are, you know, they just fear this negative connotation for standing up, and they're not going to stand up on their own. We need to let them know that there are plenty of people out there who have been observing the same things they have and feel the same way they do about them. And, you know, we need to have faith in our people that if we can show enough, you know, repetition in our actions, that they're going to stand with us no matter what the media calls us.
So what are your plans for the next, first of all, yeah, what are your plans for the next month, 2 months as far as this campaign moves forward?
Well, it's going to be November 4th when the election. It's less than a month now. My plans are to do whatever is necessary to overcome the increasing attempts by the media establishment, by the establishment overall, the Jewish establishment, to silence my campaign. I've got a number of ideas in mind. I'm going to be going to Louisville this weekend, or this upcoming week, after this weekend or the early part of the week, to meet with a fellow there who was a victim of a four-on-one attack by black youth, as they call us. I call them savages. They call me racist for that. Their behavior, I think, is savage behavior, so I'll call them savages. I don't care what they say. This man, as of this past Monday, had his case dismissed after this was a case that he was beaten in April of 2013. The guy was arrested in July of 2013, and now they're deciding to dismiss the case. So we're going to attempt to meet with the mayor there and going to also address and meet with the prosecutors and then have a demonstration there in Louisville. I've got a number of other events that are scheduled there.
The savages, as you call them, they were, the case against them was dismissed?
There was only one of them that was arrested, and I guess for lack of evidence, they have dismissed this case. One of them that was involved in the case actually went on to that Twitter site, went online, and bragged about beating this man up. Now, again, we have a law enforcement in this country that respond to the media. It's media-driven law. We as white people have to stand up and start driving this with these elected officials and start forcing them to respond to us, because we are the ones that are being victimized when it comes to this interracial crime in this country.
All right, Ron, let's leave it there. Ron, good luck with this. Thanks for coming on. I know you're highly sought after here, so thanks so much for honoring the people and coming to speak with me today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Thanks, Ron. Ron Lansdale, everybody. Again, write it. Candidate for Senate. Back with Zizzoro right after this. Hey, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Again, I kind of made a mistake there closing out the show only because I think I was under pressure there with the commercial break coming up. But that was Robert Ransdale again. He's with the White Guard. He's a write-in candidate for Senate in Kentucky. And I do hope you enjoyed the interview. Now, joining me from Poland, Warsaw, is again one of our favorite guests here. He goes by the name of Zizzoro. And he is a political analyst, blogger, essayist on issues relative to Eastern European politics, and a very big following out there in the Polish diaspora. Every time he comes on, we have great ratings. So, Zizzoro, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
We had that snafu a couple weeks ago, and that happens sometimes. But what happened last time when we tried to put you on the air?
I had some problems here with my connection, and it wasn't technical glitch on my part. It was a new collection of spyware installed on Skype. I had a clear-cut Skype connection working the previous day. I tested it. It worked fine. And the next day, it went dark. And I did my research on the subject very thoroughly. And as it is classified, meaning the terms that I see on my screen, the technical messages from the Skype system, back to me are not congruent with the, their technical manual. I checked it. And I got some technical messages about failure to update some database. And this database is classified. Nobody knows what it is. And so I'm pretty sure it was some in the background, some upgrade in the Skype system. And shortly thereafter, I couldn't connect, meaning I had technical connection. I have dialed up the Skype server. The connection was all right, but on my screen, I got the report. You cannot connect. So you can have 100% software running. You can be 100% sure it is all right, but it isn't, because something is going on in the background. So I updated to the newest version of this Skype, but it works fine.
So now they can hack you with no problems.
Move
on to Warsaw now. You guys have a new government in Poland. Tell us a little bit about this new government and where you think Poland's going to be headed under this new government.
It's a very interesting question, because it's nothing new about the government. We had here some kind of internal coup d'etat going in the summertime. There were some tapes released in the newspapers, and the highest official in the land, I mean the interior minister, for example, the chief of the central bank, and such people, top people from government, were caught unawares during a private conversation. And the most interesting one was between the chief of internal affairs and the chief of the central bank, National Bank of Poland. And the two of them stipulated some sort of overthrow in the finance ministry. It was 1 year before the recording took place, 1 year before. And after 4 months' time, meaning lately last year, the overthrow of the finance minister Rostowski took place. That is, the plan went forward as planned, and it was fully unconstitutional. The people involved should be behind bars, but they aren't. So you can go for sure. There were some things going in the background in the summertime. The key figures were reshuffled in the government. The Prime Minister Tusk went to Brussels shortly thereafter because of this.
Okay, tell us a little bit about this new woman as the Prime Minister, though. Is this going to indicate any change of direction in Poland's foreign affairs?
She is a practical null person. She's a non-entity, so to say. She has no political background, she has no spine, and she has no brains. So you can check for yourself on Wikipedia. She's a non-entity.
We have Kagan put in the Supreme Court. No brains, no skill, no talent, and still she's there. And, and now this is what's happening to you guys.
That's the case, and that's this worldwide now. You have worldwide figures that are 100% plastic. They are made from whole cloth. You can have them one day and the next the other one, and nothing changes.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. I'm not a good German speaker there. Former editor Udo Ufkoft.
Utlikov.
Ufketat. How do you say that?
Utlikov. That is a Russian name.
Okay, he came out just this week saying, hey, I was bribed by the CIA to be nothing but a PR outlet for the CIA. And quite frankly, I had no choice if I wanted to keep my job. What's going on with this type of release? Because that seems like a big release. Anything to do with larger geopolitics in play?
Yeah, it is. It has something to do with greater geopolitical moves because, as I previously announced to you, Merkel works closely with Moscow, with Putin personally. And they have their relationship going on already for 40 years. So they know each other very well. And you can bet your last dollar they understand each other. And so in this kerfuffle in Kiev, you see them working together and behind the scenes. And when it is so, you can bet the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the secret service of external secret service of Germany, is monitoring very closely what's going on. And such a release goes not unchecked. When the Germans don't want such thing to be released, it gets silence, the same as in America. So when it got released, you can bet the Germans want it. So it's a signal for Americans, don't mess with us. We don't want to be wiretapped on our phones. Merkel doesn't want to be wiretapped on her 5 or 6 phones. together with her family and the Putzfrau. So
I've noticed something else, Zora, and that is this. German media has come out with a lot of satire poking fun at essentially U.S. geopolitical interests. Have
Correct.
You seen these videos and the way that the German media is literally making American policies look like children, like really a bunch of buffoons and fools? Have you seen some of this out there?
Yes. It's not official, but...
Not official, but it's not clearly targeting American CIA, American media. Clearly, it looks to me like the German elites are priming their public to break away from America. Is this what you read?
I monitor it very closely because I see the difference. I know German, and I read it from time to time. And in the last half a year, I read it every day because every topic that is launched in Moscow and is worthwhile and is worth my time is repeated in Berlin. It doesn't get repeated in Warsaw because we have nowadays the Washington propaganda outlet here. Everybody talks the same language.
Yes.
So it's ridiculous to hear them and to lose time to read them because it makes no sense. You get no information. But when I checked the facts with Germans, with French, and with Russians, I get a clear-cut picture of what's going on.
And that is?
And that is that Germany is very close now with Russia, although nobody in the world wants to admit it, because it is very, And you can be sure, very complicated situation. The start of this affair took place with the recordings of Nuland. I talked it over with you shortly, and it deserves more thoroughly study because it's a diplomatical disaster when you look closely at it, at the facts. German Prime Minister, German Chancellor, making statements or comments on private conversation between American ambassador in place and Foreign Affairs Department in Washington is simply it deserves deepest note of protest on their part. I mean Washington, because it is messing in their internal affairs. I mean America, and it is discussing the diplomatic secrets in public, and it is inadmissible. It is simply inadmissible. No matter what the conversation, no ally should publicly make comments about it, because it's secret. You know, but the chancellor went ahead with the program and made a great fuss about it. She personally floated the tapes, so to say, on the official scene, making comments about it, because nobody could thereafter silence it. She commented the private conversation between Ambassador Payet and Nuland. Mm-hmm. And because of this public statement, the tapes were, so to say, launched publicly. And it is, diplomatically speaking, inadmissible. Americans cannot say openly what I say to you, because it would be equal to diplomatic defeat. Their chief ally in Europe is cooperating with the enemy.
You had John McCain. You heard, not John McCain, Senator, Vice President Biden. Vice President Biden recently making the rounds at Harvard, and he made a statement to the effect that the United States shamed Germany and the EU into sanctions. Did you hear about that? And if you did, how did that go over in European areas?
Biden is correct in this statement.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I thought he was telling the truth. Go over in Europe.
It is totally silenced here because it's this statement opens the public eyes to the facts on the ground, and therefore it cannot be seen publicly. The propaganda doesn't admit it. It's non-existent, this fact. And the other fact is non-existent. With Biden, his latest revelations about the financing of ISIS with Israel and with
Turkey,
Saudi Arabia and Turkey, the three of them. And he was forced to phone all of them with apologies.
Yeah, that was rather interesting. They forced the apology, but the statements are out there. He basically was too honest. He's not experienced at holding diplomatic secrets, apparently.
He is, but I like him because he is a type of Bush figure, Bush the younger, because he speaks his mind. And I like it. I can gather some fresh information from him. it cannot be overstated the importance of such people, because otherwise you could only get propaganda. And although he is a despicable person taking part in such deals, but I like him the way he is speaking his mind, because most of the time he's frank.
So we just asked what we need to listen to more of him.
You probably not to listen as a choir boy to the pastor, but to check the facts that he's launching and he's discussing, because there is a lot of information in his acts and in his words. A lot of cannot be gleaned from it, as you see on these examples. He is losing his footing in the heat of the moment, so to say. Probably he's not the highest intelligent person in the room, and therefore he's overrun with the facts and cannot act correctly in all situations. And so you can catch him unaware.
You mentioned a lot about propaganda. Inside of Russia, they have fast-tracked a law now that is going to be, if it does actually pass two more readings and signed by President Putin, it would limit foreign media ownership in Russia to but 20%. What's your opinion of that action by the Russians, and then the reaction by Western media outlets?
From his standpoint, from his point of view, Putin is right, because he actually runs a military government. It's a wartime for him.
Well, the sanctions against him, there is a war.
It is a war.
We must give Putin a little bit of leeway and recognize the West is at war with Russia as we speak. They're not shooting weapons right now, but there is clearly a war against Russia. Okay, this is established. Continue.
And when he's on war footing, he cannot make his decisions freely, because he's under pressure from the military. And to have the questions with the military and with the military propaganda cleared, he probably went for the shorting of the democracy. And insofar, from my point of view, is technically and correct in his actions as a war president, but he is not correct as a chief of government, because it's not correct way to deal with people and with information. But as you see in the world, everybody runs propaganda. You have propaganda in America, in Germany, everywhere is a propaganda machine.
What, Cesaro, is this? We understand the nature of media control in the West. We understand how they use it to usurp and destroy countries from within. It makes sense that Russia and Russians would want to limit this very dangerous, in their eyes, influence from controlling the very minds of their people by allowing these foreign agents to operate unbridled within their country.
So far, when you check the ownership of their media, it's reasonable freedom, so to speak, because you have all the international media present in Moscow. And they run the newspapers freely. They have the readership.
there is media freedom. And of course, in the West, you're not familiar, but in the West, all that's talked about is how there is no media freedom in Russia.
You have Russian Newsweek, you have Russian Time, you have a Russian edition of New York Times. You have everybody, Wall Street Journal is in Moscow with Kirillic edition, because it's a huge market and it is a powerful, so to say, country. Maybe not economically, but when you check the map, everybody that is worth mentioning is in Moscow. The same as in Peking. Because it's not the end of the world. They make deals and they make politics and they are grown people, you know. And therefore, you meet everybody in Moscow. So when Putin curtails the freedom of the Western press, everybody gets awakened. What's new? It's not inadmissible. We cannot take it. But, sorry, you have to take it because we have a war going by now. And Putin won't buckle to the pressure of some newspaper man talking, teaching him good manners because there is a war going on. And there is a military in the background. And we have some 50 to 100,000 casualties in Ukraine by now. I made my numbers today. And it's very depressing. Because I checked the latest figures from Russians, I'm from the underground, so to say, the alternative media. And the number of 4,000 Russian military killed in eastern Ukraine is correct. And from this number, and it is a hard number, from this number, you can make back of envelope research and figures, and it adds up to 100,000. You have 4,000 from Russians, you have 5,000 to 7,000 Ukrainians, military, and as normal in urban warfare, 10% of casualties is military, 90%. It meaning 10 times this figure is our civilians. So we ran up to 100,000.
See, I heard casualties. Again, I follow also Ukraine alternative media or, you know, companies focusing, guys and gals focusing on Ukraine. We're hearing figures as much as 22 to 25,000 Ukrainians.
Different sources, and this
Zorro, yep. And I are live. It sounds like we've lost the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've lost the studio. What I'll have to do is disconnect and call back the studio. Okay, so just hang tight. We're going to go into a break, but hang tight. I'll be right back. Okay, I got to try to get back on the studio.
Okay,
hold on. Let me see if we're connected. Okay, I think we're back. I heard it drop. I think we are now back. I can't get this thing to open up. So let me just say, hey, guys in the chat room, I know we're coming up on a break. Let me know if you can hear me in the chat room, because I had a message here that says we lost the studio. So let me know if we are still live. And anyways, going back, let's assume we're live here. Let's just carry on. Honestly, I'm hearing figures of almost 22 to 27,000 Ukrainian regular soldiers. Yeah, they're saying no sound. So let me just call back, and I'll be right back at you. Okay, everybody. I got two messages there. I got one says we weren't clear. Another says we are, but we have reconnected to the studio, and we are back. We're going to go into a break and get everything situated. Cesaro from CesaroSpot.com is with us. More to come, right? This is Intelligent Media. Okay, everybody, we're back. It's Fetch, Inside the Eye, Live, Intelligent Media for the Politically Aware. Again, this is October 11th, 2014. Here in Amman, it's 7:36 in the evening. It is now dark. We still have a very good breeze. It's very cool. The mosques have given one of their final prayers, so we're going to be settling into a very quiet evening. This is indeed listener-sponsored and supported radio again, folks. So if you appreciate the programming that you're hearing here on this show, do what you can to throw a little bit into the coffers of the station, help keep the network up and running, because quite frankly, without the network, we're not here live with you today. Cesaro calling from 213 area code, it says. We have a call in. Hi, go ahead. Welcome to Inside.
Hi. Hi, Fetch. It's Vera from Seven Arm.
Okay. Hi, Vera. You came from
I was just calling to let you know that you were only out for 1 second. Oh. Just for one moment.
That was it.
It was off, and that's all. So we didn't really miss anything.
Okay.
And I wanted to say hello to Cesaro.
Hi.
Hi, Cesaro. How is it there in Poland?
Today, very nice weather. Unusually for this time of year, 21 degrees centigrade, sunlight, and maple trees, sort of goldy. Very beautiful.
Oh, so they're just turning.
Turning gold and red. I mean,
so just the same as here, then, just the same as in Canada, basically, because our trees are starting to turn now.
So, any quick questions? Because we got a lot to cover here.
No, that's all. I just wanted to say hello, and I wanted to ask exactly where he was in Poland.
Okay, where are you exactly?
In the capital city, Warsaw, in the middle of affairs, in the thick of the action.
Okay. Well, you have a great day, and I'll listen to you on the line.
Thanks, Vera. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks so much. And that, everybody, Vera from Salmon Arm, big longtime supporter of the show. Okay, information coming out, Cesaro, from Ukraine. First, we talked about the casualties. You're saying upwards of 4,000 Russians have been killed. My sources are saying upwards of 22 to 24,000 Ukrainian military and, the National Guard rogue units, perhaps. And of course, then you have the civilian casualties, not to mention, of course, the humanitarian disaster that is going on in the East, in a country that come January is going to be out of gas to heat their country. Now comes this. One of the commanders, he goes by the call sign Motorola. He is now threatening Poland, stating something to the effect that if Poland continues to supply weapons to Ukraine, that Novorossiya itself, the eastern Ukraine, of course, this is call it what you want. This is actually coming from Motorola or Givi, is saying that basically the war needs to be taken to Poland. What do you have on Polish intelligence and not just Poland, but Eastern Bloc nations providing old Warsaw Pact weapons to Ukraine?
First, comment to this news, it's simply ridiculous to launch such a threat assessment in the air and comment upon it, because this man, this partisan in some eastern country, he is practically nobody, to brandish his Kalashnikov and say he will launch a war in Poland.
Yeah, but don't forget, though, we deal with ISIS and their Kalashnikovs.
Yes, I understand. But I should bury in the ground from the sheer terror
of the, with the Kalashnikov in Syria.
You know, it's ridiculous for the propaganda machine to launch such idiotical...
I think it's idiotic also. But the charge, and I've heard this through numerous sources, of former Warsaw Pact weapons, including aircraft, making their way to Ukraine, and this is the only reason that that war was prolonged as long as it was. What's your hearing? What do you have on that?
Of course, they are transporting and selling weapons hand over fist. You can bet on it. I have reports here from official fair in Kielce. That's the biggest military fair in Poland. And the Ministry of the Military and the Ministry of the Commerce, they are boasting about new contracts in the East. So it's quasi-official.
Yeah, I guess so, huh?
Although the foreign ministry then retracted the statements about 2 billion in arms sales. But you can bet it's true. Meaning they are selling the weapons hand over fist. And it's good so, because the old junk should be sold. We need some new one. And what can I say? When the people are so dumb enough to kill themselves with it, go ahead. We will deliver as much as you want. So goes the world now.
Polish intelligence. I've heard that Polish intelligence is pretty nasty, to be honest with you. And they are basically operating quasi-death squads in the CIA model in Eastern Europe. That's a troubling thing, obviously, in no country, although we Americans were used to our government doing it. Do you hear anything about Polish intelligence operating in Eastern Ukraine and what's going on?
Maybe it's not the intelligence service, because they have here internal troubles. One team of spooks makes war on another team of spooks because of changing of fronts now. And you can hear the scandals with some government contracts for computers and IT technology going in the figures 100 millions upwards to 1 billion. So the people now on the top of the secret services, and they're multiple, are running after each other. And we have just this week, we had some secret, top secret police entity under the cryptonym CBS. That's the special police unit for dangerous people and terrorists. It's basically anti-terrorist outfit, and trained in catching terrorists, money laundering, and top official bribery. And this top unit was disbanded this week, reformed, and under new name functions already by now. It was, and during the interim time, the chief police network, communication network, it operates centrally in all the European and America. It works on the same basis, meaning the chief core, central core, to all the services, and on the central core, all the other services are running. And this chief police IT core went dark for 2 days. So you, from these facts alone, you can bet there is some internal war going on in this secret services
world. 870 area code. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Yeah, well, I better say who I am first, I guess, right? I'm Daryl. People in chat room probably know me better as a Stardust Man.
Okay.
There's something I just really feel that really is very important that needs to be said. And it's basically saying we the people on this planet, you know, whether you're behind this faction or whatever, you know, you need to say who you are. And I feel that there's something that has not been said that people, it's so misleading, is that, you know, people think people, you know, United States, you know, that, you know, they're, you know, bad. And like all these other places, and like, first of all, I'm going to get straight. I ain't saying I'm from the United States. I am from, Central North America. That's where I am living at. And, what I want to say is the people who live in the land are, the majority of them are very good souls. And the majority of them, like here lately, it looks like they hate their government. I mean, nobody's told me this. I just feel it from my heart. The Jewish people are very good souls, and I feel from my heart that they hate their government because their government is so hateful. And like, same here, this land right here, what people call the United States, very, very, very good people live here, but their government is so bad and so corrupt that it is absolutely destroying our image. That's mainly what I wanted to say.
Okay, and your name's Daryl, right?
Daryl, yeah.
Okay, Daryl. Thanks for the call. I think there's some great points to what you make there, Daryl. So thanks for the call there. Indeed, there's a lot of good people out there. And relative to our discussion, Eastern Ukraine, I've seen so many videos of Eastern Ukrainians. And to brand these people terrorists and do what the military is doing to those people in the East, it is horrendous, Cesaro.
It is. It is a total war. And it is a war, it's ethnic cleansing, to be correct. Yes. And the tactic involved, it's simply destroy everything. Why?
Their village, if there's no village to come back to. So just level the village. That seems to be the tactic.
And why? Because of people. They want to have national cleansing, so to say. They don't want to have Russians in their land. The minority, and any national minority will be persecuted. And secondly, or probably firstly, they want the treasures in the earth, the shale gas, for example.
Yes, and we've both commented on this before, and I know you've got more on this. Basically, where most of the fighting is occurring is over the massive fields of shale oil, shale gas.
And shale oil, too. And these gas and oil fields are very rich. As a case in point, the biggest of them, under the name of Yuzivska, was opened by and run by Shell. I checked the numbers on it. They are currently, allegedly, I don't want technically if it's going on, but they have technical capacity to pump as much as 4 billion dollars worth of gas just now. And they can ramp up the production up in short order up to some 20 billion worth of gas yearly. So
the other prize here, what I don't understand, Cesar, is that already Western oil interests had negotiated the rights to this. They already controlled it. There was no need to go to war or change the government. They already had it. Why do you think that Newland took over the country and launched this war when they already controlled the oil interests?
It's the other way around. Putin was prepared for the overthrow of Yanukovych.
Well, this we knew. We discussed this.
But it's
obvious. They already had the intelligence.
Don't forget that the contract for Yuzivska gas field amounting to $10 billion of concession rights to the Kiev government was underwritten in Davos personally by Yanukovych. And Yanukovych knew all the technical details and financial details, and he is personally involved with his company under the name GeoService, based in Cyprus. He has 10% stake of one partner in this deal. The other partner has 90%, and the two of them on the Ukrainian side have 50% stake in the business. The other 50% stake has the Shell Central in Netherlands. So he gains personally from the business. But his backers in Moscow don't want it because they know pretty well anybody pumping gas in Ukraine will get loose from the Moscow leash. So he cannot afford it. And in short order, after the Maidan history, overthrow of Yanukovych, in 1 month, in 4 weeks' time, there were some troubles in the eastern Ukraine, and then you had domestic war going on, war of independence, so-called. Donetsk is a birthplace of Yanukovych, and the chief officers in the new gas fields come from his family and from his colleagues. So any angle is controlled. And the only way to resolve it, as the both sides see it, is through warfare. On the one side you have Moscow with its gas and oil interests. That's the primary export and chief source of hard currency. Some 80% of their exports come from gas and oil. So it's no joke for them to have new competition in Ukraine growing. They cannot afford it, simply. Otherwise, in 5 to 10 years' time, they will lose it completely, because from Kiev to Moscow, when you check on the map, there is only some 500 miles to go. For them, it's very, very close. Dangerously close. And I understand Putin, and I understand his stance on the matter. He cannot afford to lose Ukraine over this new development.
We gotta get you back. Show's already over.